So to equate 60 seconds in the actual sun, you would have to be under the opal light for 60 hours.
Oh, okay, gosh.
This is key. So when we say 6 minutes, it is not the same thing as being 6 minutes in the sun. It is not the same exposure.
I like to compare it to a microwave. When you have like a cheap microwave that has a low watt, okay, you put a hot pocket into the cheap one that has low watts, the cheese is not going to be melted. It's still going to be frozen.
And frozen.
Yeah. Yes. But in the more expensive microwave, at the same amount of time that has the higher watts, that cheese is going to be totally melted in the middle.
Right.
So if you think of that as your eye, I want to have the frozen cheese in the middle.
This is not the area that you want high intensity.
Always ask why. Why is this the way it is?
The whole goal is to rise the industry, to grow it.
Yeah, don't worry about giving us credit, guys. We're not here for that.
If it grows the industry, that's what makes me happy. Well,
when you first said it, I was going to hang up.
Yeah. It's not a race you want to win.
Yeah, you're going to lose because it'll be too cheap. You'll be working for like McDonald's money. Otto Minter, onto our show from Ellie Bana.
Thank you so much, guys, for having me on board.
Okay, we'll take 20.
I can't do math. I'm a beauty professional.
Yeah, tanning. I do teeth whitening. I'm like, okay, there's some point where you got to draw a line.
My biggest concern is longevity and making sure that you've got the best possible mechanical fit. If you're looking for a lash podcast that will challenge how you do lashes, build you up, and help you create a business that not only thrives, but allows you to live a life you're proud of, you've come to the right place.
This is LashCast, your friend in the lash industry. Coming to you from the City of Roses, this is the broadcast by lash professionals and for lash professionals. Thank you for hanging out with us today. Today, we're excited to bring another chapter of our UV light series. Those of you who have been following us now for real, almost 2 months now, we've been going back and forth. We've had a few breaks, but we're going to come back today. And today we're excited to have Lash Apothecary on our podcast. Olivia Knight, Curtis Knight, and Frainer are going to be on our show today. And we're going to talk about really UV light from a distributor point of view. They've been, I think, been doing this for a year or two now. We met them last year at LashCon, and we got to get to know them a little bit better over the last few months, and we're excited basically to have them come on and talk what they've learned, their experiences, and what sets their product apart and how it works and how it's safe and all that, because our goal here is to help you have a well-rounded view. So if you have not done our other podcasts, you need to go back and listen to Todd Harris. We did a couple episodes with him. He's a physicist who works in this world. He actually helped develop the light that works for the Loom Robotics company that does lashes using UV light. We talked to Sue Jen, and she's a manufacturer. She's the one who originally came with the whole idea. She's the one who kicked the can back in 2012. That's how far back this whole journey began. And so please go back and listen to that episode. We also had Michael Becker on to talk from a chemist point of view. We had Dr. Warren Stout to talk about from a medical point of view. So we've really tried our best to give you many, many different takes on this whole thing. And if you're just now dropping in, you really need to, after this episode, go back and listen to those other ones so that you can make a very educated decision if this is something that is right for you. But before we get into this episode, let's do our announcements.
It's time for announcements. Announcements.
Guys, we are in the middle of LashCon season, meaning we are hot and heavy. Like, that's all I do every day. I work on LashCon, talk LashCon, sleep LashCon. It's exciting times, and tickets are on sale right now, and they're the lowest rate they'll ever be. Rates will be going, or prices, I should say, go up next month. So do not delay. Buy it today. Right now, it's either a 6 month, or it might, by the time you hear this, be a 5 month payment plan. So we do have ways of easing the pain. And with the price only being $747, you divide that up, it's only like $100 and some a month between now and LashCon. So very doable. You just work your little butt off doing lashes and take one appointment and pay for your LashCon ticket. So it's very, very doable. Guys, we have 4 days of socials, 3 days of classes, 3 days of a trade show, and really one event that Really, if you pack every conference this year to combine, still, I don't believe would give you the value that our event has for only $747. And we have payment plans to make that very easy. By the way, we have so many systems set up this year. We're going to do our best so that everyone who comes solo will find a way to connect and make some friends. On Friday night, before we even get started, Friday late afternoon, early evening, we are going to have a solo meetup, a party for one. That's going to be for anyone who comes all alone. You come to that networking event, we're going to have some games, some ways to meet people, and we're going to come up with plenty of other ways to do this. So please do not let the reason why you're not coming be, I don't know anyone. That one, check off your list. That is not a good excuse anymore. We have all these ways to help you feel connected and make friends. Trust me, that is the ongoing fear that I've seen in the past. And every time someone comes in with that fear, they leave with friends and feeling connected. So we'll take care of you, okay? And if you don't know anyone, you're feeling scared, come up and talk to Tuss. She is the ultimate networker. She'll make you meet some people and connect you with some friends. I promise that will be not one of your concerns when you leave LashCon. By the way, our lineup this year is second to none. You won't get this at any other conference, guys. We have a UV light panel, not with just some lash artists. No offense, you guys. I know a lot of you have opinions on it, but most of us don't know that much about it. I don't know that much about it, but I do know some people who do. So we're actually going to bring on our lineup that you've had in this podcast. They're going to come and be there to do a Q&A session, and it's going to be a long Q&A session. I think we're going to give you an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, sit down and listen and talk and question these people, ask any question you have. We have Todd Harris coming. We have Dr. Stout coming. We have Sue Jim from Illumino. We have Michael Becker. He's the chemist. We have Olivia from Lash Apothecary. Guys, this is the probably one session that we have to make sure it's in the biggest room possible, because I think everyone's going to be in this one room, because it's going to be insane, because this is really one of the most pressing questions of our industry right now. Is this safe? Is it okay? And what should I be concerned? Are there concerns? All that stuff will be answered in this panel. We also have Loom Robotics coming, just to make things even more crazy. We have the founder and CEO of Loom Robotics coming. He's been on our podcast too. And we're going to basically be talking about Lash Robots and what's their place in this world. And should we be afraid? What type of, are they going to take our jobs? So you don't want to miss that. We have Dr. Matthew Zyrus coming. He's the leading expert on contact dermatitis in our nation. He wrote a book on it, guys. There's not many people who've written books on this. Not an exciting topic. But for doctors, it is, and for Tuss, it is. And that's the allergy. We're talking about the allergy. And he's going to come and basically do a Q&A with Tuss. So you don't want to miss that. Janice Lux is going to be here. She's an optometrist who's going to be speaking. We have Ted Gibson. He's a celebrity hairstylist. He is a resident hair guru on TLC's What Not to Wear. He's been featured in Vogue, Harper's Bazaar, Elle, Vanity Fair, just to name a few. He's a regular contributor on the Today Show, Good Morning America, Oprah, Entertainment Tonight, CNN, American Morning, and so many other channels. He's all over the place. He's really the biggest name in the hair industry when it comes to cutting hair. And he's going to be here speaking on the big stage. So we're really excited to have Ted join us. And also, not to put it any lower, but already I've been talking about all these big names. And again, something that makes LashCon different. You go to a lot of conferences and you're going to get all our Lash community, and we love them and we can't wait to see them and hear them speak. But here we cut up the game and we bring in just a whole nother level of speakers that you can't get at any conference. Not one of these speakers will be at any of the conferences this year, anywhere in the world, but they'll be here at LashCon. That's why you don't want to miss it. And these are people that will change your life. These are the people who will change your business, because they're going to challenge you and they're going to make you think differently about things and help you be more free, because our goal is always to have you free of choice, be able to do whatever you want with your lashes, whatever you want with your business, so you can be the best lash artist possible. But we also have, just to add some more excitement, we have Valencia Koger from Minx by V. She's the biggest growing lash influencer in the industry today. And then we have also the two biggest names, I should say, Abel and Ellie DeLeon from Lash Cowboy and Minx by V, Valencia Koger. Both of them combined, the two fastest Instagram accounts, TikTok, all that stuff. You definitely want to come see them. They're going to be speaking. And I believe last I checked, I think this is their first time they've ever done a big stage speech. So we're excited to have them. Chris Carr, you probably know him from Lash Guy Pro. Otto Mitter from Elibana. Denny Diva or Dennis Rodriguez. Tiffany Mitchell, Ruthie Bell. We're going to have Nina from Nina Lash also speaking and teaching her class in Spanish. And then we have classes on investing, on taxes, on AI, lash technique, and the list goes on and on. Plus, guys, we're expanding the Lashie Awards this year. More details to come on that. All right, this has been a long promo. So I don't normally do it so long, but I really want to give you a little bit more insight to what's coming. So let's now get to why you came here. You came here to learn about UV lights. And I'm excited to have our guests today come on and share their expertise, Olivia, Curtis, and Ann. So let's now go to our interview with them.
Welcome to the show, guys.
Hi.
We are super excited to have not all three of you. We started with two and it's grown.
Yeah.
Two, three. We have many people we deal with. There's always a husband somewhere lurking in the background.
Yeah.
And as we look at this video, literally he's lurking in the background right now.
I love it. Welcome to the show, Curtis. So glad you're here.
Yes, it's great. And we're excited because we've been talking to a lot of people about this whole supposedly very controversial topic of LED UV lights, and are they safe? Are people dying? Are we damning our clients' blindness for the rest of their life? Or is it maybe a little overreaction, or like the early days of when we had with volume, like a mega volume, like everyone's like, oh, you're damaging lashes. You can't do that. Right. There's always a pushback to new ideas and new things. And so
exactly. We
thought what we'd like to do is really talk to a whole bunch of people, which we have. We've been talking to scientists. We've talked to chemists. We've talked to doctors. We've talked to manufacturers. And now we are talking to a distributor. And for you guys, obviously, what we've been excited to find out as we've gotten to know you a little bit is that you guys are doing your due diligence to make sure that there is real a thought out process behind this, and that it's not just you grabbing a product off the shelf and trying to sell it to people.
To make a buck real quick and skirt the issues, that's not who you guys are.
Yeah.
No.
So what we want to do today is first, we want to get to know you a little bit, just so people know your background. I mean, you've been supporting LashCon for the last couple of years. It's been wonderful to work with you guys. But also, we got to know you just because this is actually our second recording. We did this first without knowing all the details, and then we've learned a lot more about the industry, and then we thought we'd go back and re-record some of these episodes so that we could be a little bit more thorough in our questions and also providing the right information so our listeners can make good choices. So Let's get started first. So people know who you are. Like, who is Olivia and Ann and Curtis? Who are you guys? And why should we care at all what you have to say about this whole thing about LED and UV lights?
Okay, so I'm Olivia. Ann is my mom. We both are full-time lash artists. And Curtis is my husband. So we started Lash Apothecary in 2021.
It's like a COVID company.
Yep, we're a post-COVID company.
We are.
And we wanted to be able to provide a different type of chemical. We don't use anybody else's manufacturer. We are our own manufacturer, which is cool. So we have a lot of hands-on with the chemicals themselves, which is a little bit different.
Let me ask a question. When you say that you're the manufacturer, does that mean that you didn't use a product that was on the shelf and you white labeled it? Or did you?
Yeah, so we're not white labeled at all. We start from the conception of the formula itself. And then we have our own chemist in a lab that's actually in America, which is cool. So we can get our stuff pretty quickly. And then she'll make our stuff and then she sends it to us. We test it out, make sure it's what a lash artist would like.
Right.
And if there's any little tweaks that we want, she'll tell us like, yes, you can make that change or no, you can't.
Right.
And she'll tell us why.
Okay. So you guys are the only ones that have this formula, right?
Correct. Yes.
Okay.
Very cool.
That's very exclusive. And the other thing is it's manufactured in the States?
Correct. Yes. In Texas.
Hey, yeah. Yeehaw. Both said yeehaw the same time. No stereotypes here at all. No. All right. Now, as far as the manufacturing now of the equipment, the UV light and all that, how did you go about that? Is that something you manufactured or is that something you found a manufacturer that makes it?
Our chemist actually found the manufacturer. She did the vetting first. So she made sure that what it was that we were getting was something that was properly made.
And they didn't know.
The whole reason that we have a UV system is because for years we've been trying to have the lowest cyanoacrylate content possible.
Nobody could see me doing this, but I was doing jazz hands here. Yes.
Right, I know. And like the different formulations for the glues. That was our ultimate.
And you know, so every time that we would ask, can we get that content lower? And she would always say,
no,
this is as low as it can go for it to react to the environment.
For it to work.
So then she said, if you want lower, you have to cure with UV.
So she was really the one that was like, okay, this is the new direction. Because what a lot of people are doing, there are some other brands now that are saying we're not using cyanide acrylates, but they are actually using acrylates still. And the problem is acrylates still have irritation and cause problems. So yes, it might be not a cyanide acrylate allergy or reaction, but it'll still be a different kind of reaction.
So let's backtrack just a second. For those who are maybe new to lashing or new to this podcast, why would somebody want a lower cyanoacrylate? Why would that be something that somebody is looking for?
If you have a lower cyanoacrylate, you're going to have less fumes. Typically, and like you guys have talked about a ton, which I love that you guys are bringing awareness to the fact that it's typically not an allergy. It's usually a sensitivity. And what that sensitivity is from the fumes.
Yes, absolutely. You are a smart cookie. I'm going to crown you smart cookies today.
I wish we had a little crowning sound effect.
Really? We need a crowning sound for the smart cookie of crown.
So when Tuss says, I crown you a smart cookie, we have a magical sound going, ding.
Yes.
No, what was it? The margarine commercial where they would have a butter or something like
parquet.
That?
Oh, parquet. Oh, yeah.
And they would have a crown with butter.
Butter and crown. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
All right, whatever.
Well, let's go back to the cyanoacrylate. Every lash artist has struggled with this at some time in their life. Somebody, a client calling back the next day going, my eyes are swollen. Did you give me an infection? What's going on? And then freak out ensues. Every cyanoacrylate is an eye and skin irritant. There's no way that we can get around that. And so it's true. Using an adhesive that has less of it is going to be more beneficial in preventing some of that allergy. It doesn't mean that it's going to completely remove it if somebody is truly allergic. But it's going to reduce that for most people. So I applaud you in looking for that kind of a solution.
Yeah. Also, with the cyanoacrylate, it takes on the moisture around it and brings in for the next, couple days? Mm-hmm. All the moisture. You have moisture in your eyes. You have moisture. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's stinging so much, too, is it's taking in from everywhere, even in your eyeballs.
So, and I learned that from you. Why don't you guys tell me tell our listeners how the photo initiate, how this process works with the UV or the LED curing adhesive?
So typically a UV curing adhesive is going to have an extra ingredient in there called the photo initiator. Each company is going to have a little bit different formulation or different chemical for their photo initiator, but ours responds exactly to 400 nanometers. Mm-hmm. So once it recognizes that 400 nanometers, then it basically tells all of the other ingredients that it's time to cure, and it basically freezes everything.
Right. As opposed to a traditional cyanoacrylate, which bonds or polymerizes through anionic polymerizations. That means any kind of moisture that's on the natural lash or oils. And once it hits that, it sets up this chain reaction that makes it hard and plastic. It is the photons of light. And the way that it's different from what I understand is that it happens from the inside out. So what happens is there's much less of formaldehyde that is coming off those bonds. There's a very small, minute amount of formaldehyde that is released when those bonds polymerize. And there's no way that you can get around that. It's not a lot.
It's not a lot. And it's not a danger level that people are concerned of some sort of.
But some people are a little bit sensitive to it. And so this reduces all of that. And from the chemists that we've talked to, it's lower amount and it's happening from the inside out. So as a result, there is less particulate, CA cyanoacrylate particulate that's in the air, that's around the adhesives drop, around the eyelashes, and there's much less irritation involved.
Yeah.
Cool. So you guys were on this mission to find that cyanoacrylate free or less cyanoacrylate.
Yeah.
And you stumble upon this thing where your chemist is like, well, guys, really, if you want to go that way, it's UV.
Originally, we told her no.
Oh,
we
really?
Did. Ah. Okay.
This was at the beginning. She goes, if you really want a true sensitive adhesive, she says, the only way to do that is to cure it with light. And we were like, Oh my God.
So we did say no. That was about 3 years ago.
And I have to say, that is what, when we talk about UV or we see it on the internet, there's a lot of people saying, hands up, no, let's wait, because UV is dangerous. Don't we want to avoid extrinsic aging? Don't we put sunscreen on?
I don't know about you, but I like being old.
Yeah. when you go to the dentist's office, they make you put on the glasses, they have filters on. So don't tell me that's safe, because you're going to be putting that in people's...
Exactly. And then we get the, well, if you go to a tanning bed, then you have to wear goggles in the tanning bed. And yes, you do. But that's actually a totally different bulb. It's a different wavelength. Because the tanning bed's meant to penetrate through the tissue.
Yeah, that's what you're there for.
Yes. Yeah,
that's right. So let's talk about tanning booth. The bulbs that they use are UA. So they will say in the very beginning, I remember in the 80s, they would say it's a safer tan because you're never going to burn.
Yeah.
And we thought, oh, wow, I'm not going to burn, right? Because a UVB ray is shorter. And when you have too much UV, the blood vessels get swollen. You have the hallmarks of what we call a burn because you've got that redness and the tenderness. So because the bulb in the tanning booth doesn't have that, it's a UVA, we think, oh, therefore no damage is being done. But we all know that a UV ray is longer, it's more deeper penetrating. And while you won't get the telltale signs of a burn, you will get long-term damage because that ray goes into the skin, penetrates very deep, and it damages the DNA. So you're not going to see the results now, but I promise you 10 to 15 years later, it's going to show up as tan. So, but a lot of people think, oh, well, this is the same kind of ray. I'm going to be putting that on my client's face on purpose. And then I'm looking at that. How can you tell me that's safe? What would you say to that, Olivia?
So a bulb in a tanning bed is usually a fluorescent bulb. So it has mercury vapor on the inside and it has a much wider range of...
You mean light, the wavelength.
Wavelengths, it's very broad.
Right.
Yes. The watts and the amps are way higher.
Way higher.
So there's that, right? And it is meant to penetrate.
To penetrate, tissue. Yes.
So with the opal light, it is 395 to 400 nanometers, which is the wavelength scale, right?
Yeah.
So that is almost blue light.
It's right on the
very
edge.
Very close. Right there on the cusp. So sometimes you'll look at that light and it looks blue. Sometimes it looks purple. It depends on the light that's happening around you.
What I've heard is none of these lights are 100% 400. I've heard from some brands, they say it's 360 to 410. It varies. Your guys is actually, I think, one of the most narrow, 395 to 400.
So we actually... Our series two is a straight 400.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah.
And I think daylight or visible light is like 430. Is that right? I think around the range where you're in, out of UV. UV ends at 430, 440.
You're looking at.
Okay.
But essentially, the commonplace or the most perceived is it stops at
400. Okay.
400 up to 710. Is in the visible spectrum.
The visible. Okay. So there is UV in it though, right? When we're talking about in that range, we still have UVA is in there. It's just not, it's at the tail end. So it's one, it's weaker. And two, I guess we'll talk about is the amount of power you're putting behind it.
So let's take a step back real quick and let's talk a little bit because we're talking about UV and wavelengths as if everybody understands this.
Right.
And let's pick it apart a little bit. And Curtis, we might need your brain in here to explain it to us. The light. And this being on a spectrum and these numbers that we're talking about, 395, 400, can you explain a little bit about what the wavelengths are?
So it's a very broad spectrum. UVC, I don't remember the exact numbers, but UVC is the most dangerous of the UV.
For skin.
Yeah.
That does not come through the ozone layer to the Earth's atmosphere. And when COVID was present, that was what was used to disinfect. We, of course, do not want to use those on people's face.
No, they use UVC lights in
water purification.
Right. They use it in sterilization cabinets. Like I know surgeons will use it in their operating room, but no one's allowed to be in there when the UVC light is on because it's so damaging.
And you can't see it. It's not visible, right?
No.
This is a non-visible light now because it's so low.
But you can smell it. It has a smell too.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah,
very low wavelength, but high energy.
So let's talk about, Paul and I pulled up a chart right here. So we're looking at ultraviolet light, which you cannot see, is in the 300 spectrum. And it includes UVC to UVB and UVA. So UVC is 250 to 240. Then UVB is 240 to 320. And UVA is 320 to 390. So a lot of...
Or 400.
400,
it's in the...
Some charts you look at, they'll say it just... Because it's so close to being blue light. And blue light is something that all of us can understand. Those are our phones, the TV screens, computer screens, tablets, things like that.
Right.
So electronic screens are blue light. So we're almost blue. So we're like right there on the cut.
So imagine like a band, and 300 is invisible. And then right at the 400, it turns purple and bluish. And that's the line that we're talking about, what blue light is.
And the reason why we're distinguishing this is that obviously the lower the light level, the more dangerous it is to the human skin. And we're saying right now with these lights that we see on the market, they're all around the 400 range, which is a very marginal difference. We've talked to a chemist, we've talked to a doctor, we've talked to people, and they said around 400, as long as it's not like the super powerful light, it's extremely non-damaging.
I want you to think of like our LED lights on our cars. Those are all visible light. It's the same kind of light that we're talking about, and it's being projected out at people. So that's the same kind of thing. It's the same kind of wavelength.
Right.
So now we broke down a little bit about lights, and it's measured by nanometers, right?
Is that? Yeah. It's like a measurement of wavelength. So yours is a band between 395 and 400, and it's really right on the edge. So visualize that it's at the purple to blue, like right there on that bandwidth. And so that is a safe wavelength.
It's in the range where you need a lot of load for it to be dangerous, where it needs to be. This is where we're now at a range that it's relatively safe as long as it's not long exposures and large amounts and intense amounts.
What we learned is that there's actually no formula that says, okay, this is safe or not, because it's so variable. The formula is based on three things. The first one is, what is the wavelength? The second one is, what is the irradiance? Or another way of saying that is the power or density per unit area. Right. How big is that like area of light as is shining on? That's the irradiance.
Because like a laser is very focused.
Very coherent. Correct. And it's like very penetrating. Whereas other light sources are more diffuse, divergent, and it's a softer. Like if you put the flashlight on the wall, it spreads widely.
If you do it real close to your table and you looked at it, you'll see a lot brighter, more intense light.
So that's the irradiance or the density or the power per unit area. And then the other part of the equation is exposure or the time or the dosage, right? So we've got wavelength, irradiance, and exposure. And all those things speak a language that says this is safe or unsafe, right?
Right.
So I guess right now we've talked about the wavelength, and you guys have said that the wavelength and the range were as long as the other two factors are good. This can be a safe wavelength. I guess maybe we can talk about is the irradiance. What is the irradiance measured on your device?
So we do have two devices. We have our OG, which is the one that we released first.
And that's the Opal.
Uh-huh. And then we have the Opal Series 2.
Two come out.
Like last week.
Yeah. She and I have been testing them for the camera.
You're in my ears, Tussle.
I'm excited. We have to have champagne.
A little bit different irradiance levels. So the original Opal is 0.6 irradiance.
What does that mean? Let's talk about that.
She explained it so well.
That is based on the equation of proper use, of course. Mm-hmm. If you have a light too close, like you mentioned before, the density is going to be much more significant. You have it further away, of course, you're going to dilute that beam just a little bit. It's going to change things. So as intended to be used, it's at a 0.6.
Okay.
And how far away is that from the eye when you set it up? What is your recommended?
The OG is somewhere between 6 and 8 inches.
Okay. 6 and 8 inches. Okay. And what's the new girl?
So it is between 8 and 10.
Oh, wow. Okay, so a little further
back. Okay.
Yeah, a little bit.
That's great.
And that makes it easier to use because if it gets too close, you actually get in the way of work, right, while you're trying to do lashing.
Correct. Yeah.
I always like to use lash artist language and say your longest isolation tweezer, that's about the right distance.
Okay. There you go. Good way to put it.
So you just hold your isolation tweezer up to it and you're like, okay, that's about right.
Keep it very simple. So when you're doing that now, what does that mean, I guess, to people who have no idea what that number is referring to? Where would it be dangerous, I guess, if it's considered safe? What would be a number that if it was 2.0 or whatever?
So like a 2.0 could be achieved by the overuse. That like the extended exposure creates that point, that 2.
So having it on for too long can increase the radiance to a level that would be considered unsafe.
Yes, which is why we have to point out with these systems that as intended to be used, that is the irradiance.
Like, let's just say someone decided to leave the light on all the time. Like they turn on, they put a foot and just last for some reason with the light on through the whole point for an hour and a half. Would be considered dangerous because now you're not using it as it was designed to be used.
Yeah.
You're not turning it off and giving that skin a break, yeah. basically.
Well, plus it wouldn't work anyway.
Yeah, it wouldn't work like that. Because,
you're going as you're taking it over. So.
So the last component is how much time for the adhesive to cure.
I say 2 to 3 seconds.
For those who aren't as efficient, like if you're just a newer lash artist, I would say probably 3 seconds, which okay. is fine.
Now, still nothing wrong.
Now, let's say you've been using this for years and you're super efficient and you are a master lash artist at the top of your game in terms of speed. Would she be able to cure something faster than that? 1 second.
I would just still say like 1 to 2.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like I wanted to like get there and stay on for a second.
So 1 to 2 seconds, maybe max 3 seconds for the cure. How much time is the client and the lash artist being exposed to that light for the entire duration of her service, one client service?
On average, on a full set would be about 6 minutes total. And then on a fill, it's about 3 minutes yeah. total, give or take.
Which is like the time it takes for you to walk from your office to your car. It's correct. Like, that's the same amount of exposure.
And not only that, but because the light is so not intense at all, because it's only at 5 watt LED. So if you think about that in terms of like light bulbs in your house, household light bulbs are all LEDs too. And those are 60 watts, 100 watts. So if you think about it in terms of watts that way, this is only 5.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because that was an enlightening point for me, the first podcast that we did. So let's talk about the power. Yeah. So when we compare it to a light bulb in the house or a headlight on the car, or a tanning booth light power wattage. What is the wattage in something like a household bulb?
Well, 40 watts is like a really dim light in your house. It has that nice kind of relaxing mood that you do.
Like mood,
Like you just do a little mood lighting. You're going to be down around the 40 watt range. But when you walk in a room, that's going to be more like 100 watts. You're
like a halogen light?
You're going to see, well, halogens, that's even brighter. Halogens can be extremely, you can have 400 watts in the halogen light. Ooh. So that like in your yard or whatever. So these lights are literally like one, the strength as far as wattage.
Okay, so what would be like the wattage on our phones? Or like you have a little electronic gadget and you plug it in at night and it lights up. Do we know what that wattage is? That would be a cool question.
Do you know?
Not off the top of my head.
Okay.
Well, let's find out. Paul's Googling it right now.
So I did just find a tanning bed one, if you would like.
Ooh, yes. Tell us, what's a tanning bed wattage?
Oh, 2,000 watts.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. Hey, while you're at it, can you look up a headlamp on our cars? What is the wattage for that?
They're saying right now, wattage on the phone is 20 watts.
20 watts. Okay.
But so that's on the phone. I don't know if that's on the screen. They're saying here nano.
I need a flashlight.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right. Now on the screen, it's around 150 M-watts. So is that mini watts?
Was that milliwatt?
Kilowatt?
No, that's M. Oh,
I bet it's milliwatts.
Milliwatts, which is really small amount.
However, we look at our phones
all the time.
All day.
Yeah.
Okay.
Our eyes open.
So, and that's part of the whole thing. Cause whenever anybody emails and they ask, like, what's the wavelength? And I'm like, no, I got to give you more information than just the wavelength. Yeah. I got to tell you the amp. I got to tell you the exposure. I got to tell you the watt. I got to tell you the whole thing.
So let's go through the whole caboodle.
The whole loaded quesadilla that it is 395 to 400 Nm on the wavelength scale. And it is a 5 watts LED. And then its final output. So it's 1.2 amps
input from power in to the
Power in. And then once it finally outputs to the beam itself, like the light is only 0.6 amps.
Okay. So the 5 watts is the total max energy that drives
out
the bulb, right?
Yeah.
Now, when we talk about amperage, can we break that apart?
We're not talking about amperage right here.
Okay, but the next thing is the amperage, right? Help me understand. I'm a beauty professional. We need to understand
this. And this is the thing. So this is why we explain it in the way that we do, because we are not photobiologists. Mm-hmm. We're not electricians. We're lash artists. We know about tanning beds. We know about cell phones. We know about the sun outside. We don't study this type of thing. So that's why I have Curtis put it into girl science terms.
Yeah. Okay, Curtis, girl science.
Yeah, so where are we at?
Maybe, Curtis, if you're able to summarize all the things, the nanometers, the wattage, the input, output, just in a very simple way, so people would understand what your device does as far as on the technical background. Does that make sense?
So you can compare the wavelength to being within 10 nanometers of your iPhone. Very close. And as far as the watts goes, it is basically of your normal household light. Very low. And the amperage is essentially the same as what you would listen to your car radio on.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
I think that makes sense. So these are all very low. And then we were also saying the most exposure on a new set would be 6 minutes. And on a fill, we're talking about 3 minutes or so. So total exposure time during the appointment. That's not a large amount. Like I said, walking out to your car, you'll get the same amount of exposure,
for sure,
if not more.
So to equate 60 seconds in the actual sun, you would have to be under the opal light for 60 hours.
Oh, okay. Gosh.
This is key. So when we say 6 minutes, it is not the same thing as being 6 minutes in the sun. It is not the same exposure.
And another way that we like to explain the watts too, and the amps and everything, like the power. So there are some lamps out there that are 10 watts.
10 watts, right. As opposed to your 5-watt bulb.
As opposed to the 5. And that's a whole another thing we can get into later. So I like to compare it to a microwave. When you have like a cheap microwave that has a low watt, okay, you put a hot pocket into the cheap one that has low watts. Middle part, the cheese is not going to be melted. It's still going to be
hard.
Like hard and very
frozen.
Gross.
And frozen.
Yeah. Yes. But in the more expensive microwave, at the same amount of time that has the higher watts, that cheese is going to be totally melted in the middle.
Right. Yeah.
So if you think of that as your eye, I want to have the frozen cheese in the middle.
Yeah.
Because this is not the area that you want high intensity.
No. You want it strong enough so that it cures the adhesive.
Right.
But that's all it does. That's
it doesn't
about
fry the tissue.
A 10-watt is what is just overkill. And it's not, and I know Curtis put it to us in a way like that, if the 5-watt goes this far
and you're measuring
and it
goes far, double
5 watts is like maybe like 5 inches, and what was the other one was like maybe a foot.
10 inches.
Yeah.
Okay,
so it's going twice as far, and then the amps are higher, the watts.
Yeah, I want to go back to what Curtis was talking about, the girl science, because I think it's super clear. I love it. So basically the wavelength is like 10 nanometer within 10 meters of your iPhone, which we all understand. The 5-watt LED, a tenth of the normal wavelength of light in the house. And then 1.2 amps is...
0.6 amps out.
No, 1.2.
No, the output.
We'll talk about that in just a second.
Actually, Todd says input is not important. Todd
okay, so the input goes in at 1.2 and then it comes out at 0.6.
Yeah.
That is like equivalent to power a radio in the car. So this is what I'd like to know, Curtis. Can you give me a really big example of high amperage? So not a car, but something else that we're familiar with.
Where would it be unsafe, I guess?
I just want to know what a high amperage is.
Oh, high amperage? Like your refrigerator. Go ahead.
So high amperage, we could even relate it to speakers again. Imagine going to your grandmother's house and she's listening to Beethoven at a very soothing level. If you drive past a stadium that has a rock concert going, those speakers are very high amperage.
Yeah.
They require devices to boost the amperage to get that sound to travel further.
Okay. A transistor radio that you hold in your hand is going to be low amperage. But at a rock concert where they're blasting heavy metal and raining down psychological warfare on people, that is like much more amperage.
Another way too is air fryer in your kitchen, high amperage. Our kitchen, we have two air fryers. We can't run them both at the same time. They blow the fuse.
Yeah, because it'll blow it.
This might be off the question, but I'm just wondering. Okay, so we just came back from London and the voltage there is like 220, because here in the United States, it's 110. Unless you go to like an operating room and all the medical devices in there have a higher voltage, right?
Yeah.
Or your Tesla or your car that gets charged, it has a more higher voltage, right? So, and if you use a 110 curling iron in a 230 outlet, you will fry the curling iron. So yes. I guess I'm just pontificating.
So each opal system comes with a USB adapter, mm-hmm. and that regulates that power. And it's the same kind of thing like when you go to another country and you have to have an adapter
to regulate
that power. So the opal system does have that adapter and it keeps it to a constant.
Right. It dampens it. And then as the output, it's at
So you don't end up having a variable range.
It's constant and it's low.
One thing that we overlooked and we didn't finish the thought on, and that was actually the manufacturing of the device, because a lot of people are concerned, where are these devices being made?
Oh, yeah.
Because, and no offense, and we love China.
But they've got a bad rep.
They make great stuff, but there's not very much regulation.
That's right.
Yeah. And there also, we talked to someone, I don't know if it was you, I think it was another company, and they said that basically they met with a company in China to looked into manufacturing. And this one company said, look, we'll put whatever stamps you need on it. We'll tell you whatever numbers you need it to be. It doesn't matter.
And it should also concern you that they send those documentation, like the certificates and all that stuff that most of those manufacturers send you.
Yeah.
They send you in a Word document. It is very easily modified and edited to your liking.
Exactly.
And it's just a one solid template used amongst the thousands of different manufacturers in China.
Yeah.
So you can talk about where stuff is made.
Yeah.
But with our layer, the reason that our chemist is the one that did the vetting is because she was the one that was able to produce the photo initiator to work at a certain level. So she needed a light that would work well with the photo initiator that was easy to achieve. And because of that, she was able to find the lamp that would work best and help us find a manufacturer in the U.S. to provide the internal component. So to save our cost, we get the tube in China, but the internal components here.
The housing for the lamp itself is all made elsewhere, but all the wiring and the LED, that's all made in America.
The important stuff.
But you mean the lamp, the LED lamp is made in China, or the lamp, which
the housing for
the housing.
It.
Okay.
Yeah. So basically just all the metal.
The shell.
Yeah. And then the light that gets inputted, plugged into it, so to speak, that, though, is made in China.
And the wiring and everything is made in America.
Okay. So the shell is made in China.
In South Korea.
They're in South Korea. And then they get the wiring and the bulb and things like all that, the LED and everything.
Okay. So that way you
really
control
clear.
The light bulb. The light bulb, you verify.
Yes, that's the important part that you want to make sure is properly made and has all of those proper certifications.
All right, so let's get into the most important thing, which is really certifications, because this is an area of distinction that I don't know if everyone's able to do.
Okay, so there are, what we've learned is that there are many governing bodies that put out standards. What is the best practice standards? And there's different bodies that, not regulated, but that put out these standards. One of them is IEC, and the code is 62471. Or the International Commission on Non-Ionizing Radiation Protection, also known as the NICRP.
Oh, yeah, INCIRP. Those standards were created in the 60s and 70s, we found. And then companies, and another thing to get into real quick is to clarify that none of this are industry regulated. FDA does not oversee any of this. At this point, they don't see any need.
There's not a mandate.
There's no mandate by the government that these lights have to follow these standards. But companies gladly, ones with integrity, actually do. Like, they build based upon these standards. And then there's another thing called ANSI, the American National Standards Institute, which published these standards that came from the 70s and 80s.
Came from the IEC.
Then they create their own standards based upon these original standards. It's very confusing.
There's a lot of standards that they all agree on. Another one is the ISO 60601 standard, ISO 2.57. And there's basically, that's a subset of standards for cosmetic
devices. Yeah.
Now, what we were explained, or was explained to us, that these are the standards. If something wants to be FDA approved, what they're going to do is the FDA is going to say, show me the standards and show me the testing from these standards.
From an approved testing lab that does this type of stuff. Now, we don't have to do FDA approval, so there's no one required to do any testing whatsoever.
But having that gives your consumers a peace of mind. So then the question is for you guys, have you had your lamp tested,
certified
by a, what is it called? A NERDL.
A national third-party
testing lab, to verify that your lamp meets the standards set by the INCIRP or ANSI or IEC 6-2-4-0-7-1. So has
you, right?
Right? I know. Yeah. I'm like, I'm getting all tongue-tied.
I know.
Here.
It's a lot. Every time I look at them, I'm like, oh my gosh.
I know.
Yeah. So we did send out our devices to be tested by a separate lab that tests basically photobiological devices.
Yeah,
the impact on a human and what the basically if there was no risk, little risk or high risk mm-hmm. kind of thing, just because our manufacturer did say like, yes, this is safe. It has this. These are all the specs, whatever. We just wanted to get a second opinion. So we paid to get a second testing done just so that we can verify that they're not just telling us that.
Yeah. What do you think they are? But
yeah, but we just wanted to make sure.
Well, that's integrity. And that's a second layer of confidence that your consumers can have in you, because not only did when you agreed to distribute this product or you had that verification from them, but you went out and did it on your own. So it's in some ways double certified, I would say. It just gives your consumers the confidence to know that you've done your due diligence and that the unit that they're using is safe. If you are using it as directed, obviously, like, you can buy household bleach and it is safe if used as directed. Obviously, if you're mixing it with ammonia or you're drinking it, that's not safe, but that's not as directed, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No one taught you to do that.
Yeah. If you use it as directed, it's safe.
Right. Right.
Yes, exactly.
Well, and us coming from us, we still work full time as lash artists, and we're coming from that perspective of we want it safe for us. We want everything to be above board and the way we want it. And we want that for everyone else too.
Yeah.
We think it's super important. So
it is super important. And I'm so glad super that you guys. So if you buy your, or if you are thinking about it, you are thinking, this Opal 2 or Opal 1 is something that I want. I want to partner with you guys. Can I see that certificate? Because the proof is in the pudding, right?
Yes, of course. Yeah. So all you have to do is just shoot us an email. We have a thing on our site that says to email us to request those documents, and we send them over. It's free. We don't charge for it or anything like that. So yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about, we talked about this before the show, about why it's actually not on the website. Why did you choose to do it this way?
Oh, yeah. He wants to back up.
Can right I interject?
Of course.
I just need to back up a little. So to follow up a little bit with Paul about not having any FDA regulation or anything like that. Also, with us going beyond the manufacturer certifications with these devices, rarely does the FDA approve a device to be resold if it does not have a third-party testing as well. Uh-huh. We don't need that, but we felt better having that and enjoying the integrity that comes along with that, knowing that we would be able to. And our adhesives and all of our other liquids are produced in an FDA-approved facility. So why not? Why not?
Yeah, because the FDA does have a hand and the EPA does have a hand in our adhesives.
Yeah, and there may be a day where the FDA does decide this. As this becomes more popular, I could see them coming along and saying, no, what, guys? Sorry, but we need you to meet these standards now. And if you've been going on for 3 years not meeting them, your business would die overnight, right? So it's a good way to go.
Yeah, so it's a good way to just start now in case it does change.
Yeah.
Because at least we know we did everything we could to be up to those standards.
That's great.
I love what you said, Chris. You're enjoying the integrity because it is, it's peace of mind, right?
It gives
you
peace
of mind.
It is.
And so all of your customers. Yeah. We like to
sleep. I like to sleep at night knowing I'm not selling a laser beam to people.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So let's talk about another thing. It's something that recently I recognized the importance of, that I've been using a lamp. I got one. Love it. I absolutely love it and been using it nonstop until it broke. The pedal broke a couple days before we left for England. And I was so bummed because I so depend on it and I had to go back to old school, and I was texting Paul. I was so frustrated as I was working. I'm like, I feel like I'm in medieval times. I can't believe that how much of an impact the light curing makes and how much I feel it's superior. But I had a hard time getting a foot pedal back and getting that rectified. So can you tell me what is your process when somebody has a problem with the technology? It's not working. It's acting up.
Or maybe it breaks right away.
Are you able to get a new light immediately to your customer?
The cool thing about us is everything that we have in our warehouse. Mm-hmm. So we can very quickly, once we figure out the problem, we usually have them send a video, some pictures. We just troubleshoot a little bit so we can verify whether you need a new pedal or you need a whole new light itself, right? And then once we determine what it is that you need, whether it's pedal or light, we overnight that to you.
Yeah, yay, bravo, because we depend on that. And it's so frustrating. I used to work in a med spa years and years ago. And if something happened with that technology, they
have to close.
Yeah. And the manufacturers of like Luminous, and they understand that you've got money on the books and they're depending on that tech. So they move heaven and earth to get you a new, either they send an engineer out right away, they try to fix it remotely, or they give you a new one. So I'm really happy to hear that, because it is about supporting the end user.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to pull the plug.
It's been really, no,
we've
really
been
good.
This has been great. And thank you guys. One thing we did talk about, I know last time, and so this will be still there, is that you guys want to offer a discount code to our listeners.
Yes.
I know it was last cast. Was what it was. So I'm assuming it was
still what it is.
Still what it is. And it was 15% off of the kit, the whole setup. By the way, does your kit include glue, or is that a separate purchase you have to buy?
Yeah, it does. So it includes one bottle of adhesive. We have four pairs of silicone eye pads in there. You don't have to use them if you don't want to. They're just a nice little extra in there. And then we have two rolls of black micropore tape. So clients, you just need to put that on their eyelids. Some clients are just sensitive to light.
Great for blondies.
Yeah, so we do provide that in there. And then there is also a tutorial video in there that shows you how to set it up, the basics on how to use it. And then once you have the lamp, you can take our certification course for free.
Awesome.
Wow. So there's like a training that goes along with it. That's
great.
Excellent. And then you get the 15% off. Can I ask what the price is?
So it's $390. So the OG, which is that original one that we had, is $390.
So that makes it $331 basically. If you could put the discount.
Oh. And the new one is how much?
So it is on pre-sale right now for $420. Normally it's $450.
Okay. So good.
Wow.
That's a great
And it
price.
Comes with all the same stuff in it. And then you get the training and all that. So yeah.
And I just want to reiterate, you do not need to use the silicone eye pads on the skin if you do not want to. Okay.
Yeah, if you don't want to. My clients really like them.
And I will say they're great for if you're sensitive girlies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's made a difference with mine.
But you can use
watery with the gel pads and tape only.
Yeah.
But you can use foam tape. You can use tape. You can use hydrogel.
Anything you want. Whatever it is.
Okay.
And how long is the light rated to last? How many years or months, or how long will they be able to get?
Typically LEDs are rated for quite a while. So these are rated for 10,000 hours.
All right.
With a full-time lash artist, that's about 10 years.
That's a while.
That is great.
10,000 hours. By the way, when that light burns out, that tells you that's when you're finally an expert. 1,000 hours to become an expert. You're like, all right, my light burned out. I am graduated.
An expert.
I am now an expert. How convenient. How convenient that is.
Yeah. Well, Curtis, and it has truly been a pleasure. I thank you for sharing your expertise and breaking down the girl science for us all. I think that anybody listening to this wanting to try it out should go ahead and take that plunge.
Yep.
I think you've gone above and beyond to demonstrate the efficacy and the safety of your product. When used as directed, it is safe to use.
Can you show us real quick where they find you guys so they can go get their light today if they want to?
So you can grab your light from us at lashapothecary.com. You can find us on Instagram. We have tons of information on our Instagram, lash_apothecary.
Awesome. And hopefully maybe see you guys again at LashCon.
Yes. Oh, we'll be there.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome.
And we'll be at ILE too. Are you guys going to ILE?
Yeah. We'll be there at ILE.
Too.
Thank you guys
we'll
so
see
much.
You
guys.
There.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, guys, that's a wrap. We are done. We are out of here. Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. Please follow us on Instagram at LashCast and at The Lash Conference. And remember to subscribe, share, and review on behalf of my Lash YouTube model, Tusney, as well as our special guests, Olivia, Curtis, and Ann. I want to thank you for taking some time to listen. Keep on lashing. And remember, you have a friend in the lash industry.